That was Heroes and Villains from Brian Wilson, and it was supposed to be on the follow-up album to Pet Sounds, the iconic Beach Boys record. But that album, called Smile, faltered and became a famous lost album before emerging slowly in a variety of forms. Well, it's now the subject of a new book, The Beach Boys Smile by Luis Sanchez, and John Byrne has been reading it for us, and John joins us now from our Limerick studio. John, firstly, tell me, if you can, a little about the convoluted history of this Beach Boys album, Smile.
Well, we could be here all night talking about just how convoluted that history actually is. But very basically, the album, like you said, was intended as a follow-up to the much-loved Pet Sounds from 1966. But kind of more than that, it was supposed to capitalise on the huge success of Good Vibrations, which had been released as a single in October of 66. So Capitol Records, who were the Beach Boys' label, wanted this new album ready for a Christmas release that year. So Christmas came and went, no sign of the album. January came and went, nothing. And by the summer of 67, the music press was announcing that the album had been scrapped. Now, a new Beach Boys album called Smiley Smile did appear in the autumn of 67, which featured a few tracks originally intended for Smile, like Heroes and Villains, which we just heard. But this wasn't Smile. It was a much more pared down, bare bones version of Brian Wilson's original concept, which was a lot more ambitious, ambitious to the point of impossibility, perhaps.
So how come this album became so heavily mythologized?
Well, I think partly because the toll its non-completion took on Brian Wilson, and that's often been seen as an important factor in his subsequent mental health problems and his drug addiction and years of reclusiveness and all that. And I think it also became the album, or non-album rather, that was central to this idea of, on one side, troubled genius Brian Wilson, while on the other side you had band members like Mike Love, who, depending on who you believe, were very uncomfortable with the more experimental and less commercial direction that Brian was trying to take the band in. And this, you know, then became seen as the album where Brian's vision for the band was, you could say, defeated, if you want to put it that way, or so the story goes.
But there's a theory slightly questioning this notion of Brian Wilson being the genius at the heart of this.
Well, yeah, that was interesting part of the book. Now, the author, Luis Sanchez, it's not that he's suggesting that Brian Wilson wasn't a genius. It's just that he's kind of exploring how the myth of his of this Brian Wilson as a genius myth got started. And he pins that on one person, who a guy called Derek Taylor, who'd been the press officer for the Beatles and who started doing PR for the Beach Boys as well. And Taylor was kind of charged with overhauling the band's image, which was rather stale and rather safe, and with pushing this idea of Brian as this maverick musical genius. And it was a campaign that was so successful that a lot of music writers then started describing the bands almost solely in terms of, you know, how Brian's genius was kind of constantly struggling not to be suffocated by, you know, his supposedly unimaginative and conservative fellow band members, or by a hostile record company, or that kind of thing.
So there you have Brian Wilson in the late 60s. The record company's looking for something from him. Musically, his fans are looking for something. And he's, meanwhile, locked away meticulously and painstakingly writing songs, editing, crafting. Mm-hmm. Just talk to us a little bit about the recording techniques that he used.
One of the reasons, apart from his mental health, his drug abuse, his erratic behaviour and all that, one of the reasons cited for the album's non-completion was those very techniques, his so-called modular recording techniques, where he'd record all these very short fragments of audio, kind of like movie takes, like you assemble a movie and then try to reassemble them into this really complex musical collage later. And, you know, it's been suggested that this was just far too time consuming and far too ambitious in those pre-digital days. I mean, he'd use the same technique to piece together Good Vibrations, a single, but that one song took him something like 8 months to complete. So, I mean, creating a whole album like that to any kind of realistic deadline was, or so the argument goes, almost like, you know, an impossible task.
Well, let's take a listen to another track that should have been on the album back in the day, Cabin Essence. And here we get a sense of what you're talking about, that unique style, I suppose, that Brian Wilson had. So Brian Wilson is ploughing away with this concept. He's working with his lyricist Van Dyke Parks, mm-hmm. and bootleg copies of the recordings are starting to leak out over the years.
Yeah.
What happened to actually force their hand and to actually get some sort of version of Smile out?
Well, you know, like I said, tracks written for the album did appear on subsequent Beach Boys releases in various forms, and the bootlegs were flying around, like you said. And it was really the early 2000s, after the success of the tour where Brian Wilson and his band played Pet Sounds, the whole album in its entirety, and that was very successful. And really, it was the success of that could coax him back into revisiting Smile and all those painful memories. And that led to a live performance of Smile in its entirety, or in something like its originally intended form, at the Royal Festival Hall in 2000. 2004, and or just before that. And then there was an album released called Brian Wilson Presents Smile, which featured new recordings, all new recordings of the tracks originally written back in 66. And just to complicate things further, then in 2011, there was also a multi-disc box set called The Smile Sessions released, which is the kind of original outtakes and the archival audio kind of pieced together into something like the form he would have wanted. So there's, you know, various competing releases out there.
I think complex is a fair term to describe the history of this particular album. But with that in mind then, how does this book, it's a, not a huge but tome, manage to bring and pull together all these strands?
Well, it's part of the series called 33 and a Third from Bloomsbury, which is, a short book. One writer takes on one album. Now, you'd think from the title that this is going to be a book largely about Smile. Well, I mean, the surprising thing that is actually takes Sanchez 90 pages of a book that's 118 pages long before he starts directly tackling Smile at all. Now, to be fair, he does say that the book is not meant to be a kind of a definitive making of account of Smile. He kind of suggests that the book follows a decidedly broader historical arc, as he puts it, and he talks about how, you know, he's going to trace the Beach Boys from their beginnings in surf pop and through their various developments and all that kind of thing, and as he says, to give shape to a narrative alternative to conventional rock histories. That sounds fine, but I just don't think the book really offers anything genuinely alternative. You know, I mean, we have 80 pages about the trajectory of the Beach Boys' career and Brian's career leading up to Pet Sounds and eventually Smile. But I think for anyone who's ever read anything on Brian and the Beach Boys in this release or non-release, I think we're kind of raking over very familiar ground here.
But this portrait of Brian emerges of him being sort of out of step, really, with the prevailing counterculture that he was trying to sort of look. I mean, there's a mention of the fact that he was trying to maybe do one-man upmanship on the Beatles, for example. I mean, he was very driven, but the vision was confused.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a familiar story, that he was obsessed with one-upping the Beatles and how, you know, the innovations that they were pursuing. And there was an interesting idea in the book that, you know, about just how, I mean, he really hammers home this idea in the book of just how kind of unhip Brian was. He talks about how sentimental he was, how kind of mawkish he could be, how earnest he was, how sincere he was, and about his love for older and, let's, you know, pretty unhip American musical forms. He loved Barbershop or the songs of Stephen Foster or Ragtime or whatever. And all of that fed into what he was trying to do with Smile. So you do get a portrait of him as a person who was really removed from that kind of prevailing counterculture. And Van Dyke Parks even says in the book that they really deliberately wanted Smile to be countercultural, as he put it, just to kind of mess with the heads of the prevailing countercultural orthodoxy, if you want to put it that way.
There's a title for an album. Can you just give us an idea of some of the lyrics? Because they were sort of eccentric, to be honest, that emerged in this project.
Yeah, there are stories about Mike Love in particular being kind of baffled and frustrated by these very esoteric and dense, or pretentious if you want to call it them, Van Dyke Parks lyrics. I mean, a famous example was when Mike Love asked Parks to explain what this quite notorious line, "columnated runes domino from surfs up," actually meant, to which Parks apparently replied, "I don't know, I was high." But I mean, that's just one story, and there's lots of those stories, and those stories have all been contested and chopped and changed over the years, so it's kind of hard to know what's true and what wasn't.
Having read the book and being so familiar with his work, where does Smile, the big project, fit in your head?
It's an astonishing album in whatever form you kind of encounter it in. I mean, I think, the Brian Wilson re-recorded release for 2004 is an amazing album in its own right, even if you knew nothing about the history. And the Smile Sessions, I think, are it's an incredible box set. You can get it in a 5-disc box set if you really want to go full music nerd on it. And I think it is a minor tragedy that it was never released. But it does exist in some forms. The songs do exist in some forms. So we could be grateful for that.
And would you recommend the book?
I mean, I could have done without, 80 pages of scene setting before we got to Smile. I could have preferred a tighter focus on the album and the circumstances surrounding its production, which is fascinating. And there's a lot of very vague and very wordy waffle in the book about the idea of America and American popular culture and how this fits in and all that kind of thing, which is quite tedious, I think. And I think it's just a bit bitty. It's a bit unfinished, which might be appropriate for, the album it's supposedly talking about, the fact that it feels unfinished. But it's kind of hard to see who'd find the book entirely satisfactory.
Well, we're going to end now with Surf's Up from Smile, and John Byrne has been talking to us there about Luis Sanchez's book, The Beach Boys Smile, which is out now, published by Bloomsbury.